Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Administration for Children and Families, Family and Youth Services Bureau, and Family Violence Prevention and Services Program. Now, points of view expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio brings you rich conversations and education on issues surrounding domestic violence in African American and African communities.
Listeners, welcome to the Women of Color Network Hour, where we will discuss specific topics related to gender-based violence and its impact on the African-American community. The Women of Color Network is a project of the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence and is dedicated to ending violence against women of color and their families by promoting the leadership of women of color advocates. If you are in immediate danger or feel unsafe in your home or relationship, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. Now, on to tonight's show.
Hello, and welcome to the Women of Color Network Incorporated Monthly Radio Blog Hour, where we bring you a range of topics addressing domestic violence in the African American community. As a national network of women of color, we use our collective voices to advocate for and educate communities about women who experience violence and hold violent abusers accountable. We use our radio blog show as a means to engage our guests and communities on important issues that all of us should be talking about and taking action on wherever we are and wherever we can. My name is Sister Samaya Fire, and I'm one of your hosts for this evening for the IDVAC and WOCN Blog Talk Radio Show. I am the Leadership Program Director at the WOCN. In addition to that, I work as a national trainer on a variety of topics, as well as a longtime advocate for women, children, and families who experience domestic and sexual violence, and also an independent consultant and organizer on social justice and human rights issues. And my co-host and community sidekick is the fabulous Miss Alice, who usually joins me in our radio blog studio. Hello, Miss Alice, and how are you? Are you there?
I'm here, and hello, Samaya, and it's so good to be back together again. My name is Alice Lynch, and I am the co-host of tonight's show, and I am also the chairperson for the Women of Color Network, Inc. Board of Directors. In my other life, I'm supposed to be retired, but I'm really an independent consultant doing what I want to do nowadays, and I spend my time working on the issues of domestic violence and the impact that it has on our communities, and I also do work around restorative justice or restorative practices, focusing on issues impacting our communities and our schools. So I am really delighted to be with you tonight. We're going to have a fun show, an interesting show, and we're doing this also to honor and recognize women of that this month is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So I'm going to turn it over to our very capable commentary, Shazmay Jackson, who's going to fill us in on some of the issues that we'll be discussing this evening. Go ahead, sweetheart.
Thank you, Miss Alice. Good evening, listeners. My name is Shazmay Jackson, and I am the program coordinator for the Women of Color Network, Inc. I will be framing tonight's topic by providing statistics and background information for our show this evening. Tonight's topic will examine physical and emotional violence, black men, and why some men batter. Men who abuse come from all socioeconomic backgrounds, races, and walks of life, and represent varying identities, personalities, family backgrounds, and profession. According to the National Domestic Violence Hotline, women ages 18 to 34 are the greatest risk, or at the greatest risk of becoming victims of domestic violence. More than 4 million women experience physical assault and rape by their partners each year. And in 2 out of 3 female homicide cases, females were killed by a family member or intimate partner. When trying to understand why some men choose to batter, it is important to look at what they get out of using violence. In male-female identified relationships, those who identify as men may use physical force to maintain power and control over their relationships with their female partners. Feminist researchers have long suggested that the structure of society and social factors such as gender, inequality, unhealthy forms of masculinity, male dominance, and the practice of patriarchy and male privilege play a very significant role in promoting violence against women. Men who hold the belief that the use of violence within relationships is legitimate are more likely to actually become perpetrators, and they may feel like there is no real consequence for their actions. Quite often, many batterers have learned violence by growing up in homes where they or siblings were physically abused or where their mother was abused by their father. A study of over 100 batterer programs revealed that 70% of participants came from violent homes. In fact, witnessing domestic violence as a child has been identified as one of the most common risk factors for becoming a batterer in adulthood. While witnessing domestic violence is one of the top risk factors in determining future use of domestic violence, many top researchers have noted that unemployment, poverty, lack of education, incarceration, and violent environments are huge contributing factors to domestic violence. A study by the National Institute of Justice found the risk of domestic violence increases when couples face job instability, live in disadvantaged neighborhoods, or lack other economic resources. The study also revealed that women who were unemployed or did not make enough money or were otherwise deprived of equal financial power largely became the victims of male violence at a rate more than 3 times that of couples with no financial strain. Historically, African Americans are more likely than any other race to suffer from poverty and live in disadvantaged neighborhoods. These unfortunate realities put black women in relationships with black men at far greater risk for experiencing some of the grimmest statistics of all. Consider the following facts by the Violence Policy Center. African-American women experience intimate partner violence at a rate of 35% higher than that of white females and about 22 times the rate of women of other races. Black women are almost 3 times as likely to experience death as a result of domestic violence and interpersonal violence than white women. And while black women only make up 8% of the population, 22% of homicides that result from domestic violence and intimate partner violence happen to black women, making it one of the leading causes of death for black women ages 15 to 35. Statistically, black women are also less likely to report or seek help when they are victimized. It has been well documented that racism faced by communities of color is systemic and institutionalized and can often play a major role in determining if the abuse will get reported or how both African-American victims and perpetrators are treated and perceived by the criminal justice system. In 2012, the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs reported that 69% of survivors from communities of color said that they were reluctant to seek help because they felt the criminal justice system would be unfair to them or treat them more harshly, or that their partners would be treated unfair or more harshly if the partners were people of color. These unfortunate realities force some African-American survivors into limited options that include living on the streets, temporary shelters, or staying with or returning to the homes of their abuser, which further impedes their ability to seek, help is the stereotype that black women are loose, loud, and aggressive, and therefore not worthy of help. These stereotypes also see the perspective that violence must have, that the violence must have started as a mutual act of violence, leading the police that respond to these issues involving black women to often arrive at the scene with the preconceived impression that both parties are at fault, which often leads to a dual arrest. It is important to end this commentary by noting that not all black women, although black women are at a much greater risk to becoming victims of intimate partner violence, the vast majority are not abused, and that black men are not naturally inclined to abuse their partners. Overall, domestic violence cases, including those involving the black community, have dropped dramatically for more than a decade. This trend is expected to continue as domestic violence laws are improved and applied more equitably, and mainstream programs are seeking and receiving training to become more culturally competent, and as more culturally specific services are being developed where communities are developing, leading, and steering more accessible services. We invite the listening audience to join the conversation today as we take a closer look at why some men engage in abuse within their relationships. Now, on to tonight's show with Samaya and Alice.
Thank you, Shazmi. That's, as usual, a lot of good information for us to ponder over. We have two really wonderful guests with us this evening. I happen to know both of them quite well and just really thrilled to have them with us. But I'm going to introduce Mr. Sam Simmons, who is licensed as an alcohol and drug counselor who has over 25 years' experience as a behavioral consultant specializing in practical, culturally sensitive trauma-informed work with African-American males and their families. He is currently the Safe Families Manager at the Family Partnership in Minneapolis, Minnesota, managing the federally funded Be More Project to engage African-American young men and boys to stop violence against women and girls. Also, Healing Generations Culturally Specific Relapse Support Program for African-American men. He is an Adverse Childhood Experience Interface Trainer in the state of Minnesota. Sam was awarded the 2009 Governor's Council on Faith and Community Service Initiatives Best Practice Award for his work with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Outreach Services, Prison Reentry, and in the African American community. He also co-hosts a radio show, Voices, on KMOJ FM, that addresses issues of the urban community. Sam is respected for his highly informed work around African American historical trauma and his highly successful Community Empowers through Black Men Healing Conference around the country. So I am delighted to welcome my friend, my colleague, my cohort, someone who I'm glad to know that he's in my life. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Well, I want to thank you for having me. That was a mouthful that you gave to folks. So I'm glad to be here.
Samaya?
All right. So I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Oliver J. Williams, who from 1994 to 2016, he was the executive director of the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African-American community, which we refer to as IDVAC. He has also served as the director of the Safe Return Initiative that addresses the issues of prisoner reentry and domestic violence. And that was from 2003 to 2016. He has worked in the field of domestic violence for more than 35 years. Dr. Williams has been a clinical practitioner working in mental health, family therapy, substance abuse, child welfare, delinquency, and sexual assault. He has worked in the battered women's shelters, developed curricula for batterers intervention programs, and facilitated counseling groups in these programs. He has provided training across the United States and abroad on research and service delivery surrounding partner abuse. He's conducted training for the U.S. military, family advocacy programs in the U.S. and abroad, and presented to numerous family violence research and practice organizations here in the U.S. and abroad. In 2015, Dr. Williams was invited to speak at the United Nations about domestic violence among African Americans in the U.S. and in Africa. His research and publications in scholarly journals, books, reports, and DVDs have centered on creating service delivery strategies to reduce violent behavior and support victims of abuse. So Dr. Williams received a bachelor's degree in social work from Michigan State University, a master's in social work from Western Michigan University, and a master's in public health and a PhD in social work from the University of Pittsburgh. So with that, I'd like to say welcome to you as well, Dr. Williams, and thanks for being on our show tonight.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Great. So tonight our show is a focus on black men and physical battering, domestic violence, and those kind of issues where we're specifically talking about black men who use violence in their intimate partner relationship. And so we want to start with you, Dr. Williams, and we want to ask you the question. What is a simple question that we want you to talk about in your own way? Why do black men batter?
Well, I think all the reasons why it was explained with the statistics earlier are accurate. I think that those are reasons why you find black men battering. I do think that there's a feminist bent on it that has some truth to it as well. But I also think that it's broader than that with regard to African-American men. You know, a lot of the literature that's focused on men who batter, give sort of a frame around it that only talks about a feminist perspective. And even though I believe it and I think that that's true, when you read research that deals with black men and violence, there's a broader context to be able to look at things as well. So the rates of violence that happen to women are sometimes equals the violence that happens from man to man. So I'm not talking about gay relationships necessarily, but talking about men being violent, African-American men, being violent to other African-American men. And mm-hmm. so to explain that, and I know I've got a short time to sort of explain it, but I think we have to look at the context in which people live. And we're talking about certain communities that have a frame in which they deal with problems that they sort of examine and live through. And poverty is something that frames some things for African-American men. But and then social context, shapes it as well. But in social context, meaning that if you grow up in high-stress, low-income environment, you are exposed to certain things that exist with that environment. And there are rules that people operate from, not only with regards to how they react to women, but how they react to other men. And there are these rules that they operate from. And I'll get a chance to talk to you about that a little bit later and recommend some books.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Allen?
Sam?
I'm sorry. Sam, after Oliver said all that, is there anything left to be said on your part to respond to that question as to why men batter, why black men batter?
Well, I think Oliver really covered a great deal, especially when he started talking about the added context. The one thing I think I would, well, a lot of the work we do is also includes addressing black men's trauma.
That was going to be my next question to you, so go ahead.
What we found in doing addressing black men's trauma is that allowing them to address their trauma also puts them in a better position to actually feel empathy for the women in our lives and women in general, and really have some sustainable outcomes in terms of how they live their lives, in terms of how they value their lives and the women and children in their lives. You know, because like what Oliver was saying in terms of some of the more general things about men who batter across the board is very similar, but we also have the issues of feeling discounted by a system, and where some of our men, and it doesn't even have to do with how much money they make, their value, finding their value in the amount of women they deal with, and finding their value in how they control women, which ends up being quite dangerous for women in particular, and black women in general, and black women in particular.
Wow. Thank you. Oliver, do you want to add anything to that?
I think Sam hit it on the head. I think that I think this issue of looking at context is important, and I'm also glad that you said that there are issues that we need to take a look at that are broader than just income. So if you sort of listen to the descriptions that were provided earlier, some people have said and believe that income is the thing that you need to look at with African Americans, when it's really broader than that. You know, poverty doesn't cause violence. There are people who are in relationships who are poor who don't use violence. On the other hand, there is a context that people live in that's problematic and that needs to be looked at as well. But I think Sam is right. It goes beyond just income. There's a context in terms of racism, in terms of problem solving, in terms of in the rules and codes that people live or learn to live by, but also displaced anger. So, and I think when I think of displaced anger, I also think of oppression. What happens is that people end up, and displaced anger is a psychological term, it's a defense mechanism. People get angry at something in one area of their life, and then they take it out on another area in their life, usually within families. They need to be aware of that and how they're loaded up for it, but they also have to learn how to problem solve associated with the issues that they identify as the problem. And the other thing I think is a problem for all men who batter is that and also for society, is that most people think that violence is a natural consequence of conflict. It's not. And that there's people, the natural consequence of conflict is conflict resolution. But there are people who deal with violence, and it's been interesting when I've talked to different groups about that work with men, sometimes there's a hard ability to get them to buy into it because they think it's simple conflict resolution and then violence will take care of itself, rather than trying to deal with issues like what Stephen Stosny talks about with regard to self-soothing, for men to learn how to not load up and to heal themselves rather than being so agitated that they take it out on people. So that's the additional thing that I wanted to say in addition to what Sam was saying.
And, you know, to add to that is there's some generational differences, too, I've found.
Right.
My clients under about 38 and younger, a lot of those individuals, especially raised in urban areas, but it's not just urban areas, a lot of those individuals, both the males and females around that age, were raised in trauma, where they were young trying to fend for themselves because that was during one of the most horrific times in our community, and we've had many of them, by the way, around the crack era, where our girls were being passed around as well as our boys. The older kids happened to fend for the younger kids, and so we have two or three generations that haven't been able to sort through their trauma, and within that, haven't find that violence and abuse becomes real easy, not just in terms of their relationships with each other, but their relationships with their children, and which, you know, causes some major issues. And the other piece of having that generation of men be highly female dependent, and that includes our men who we think are not a problem as much as our educated African-American brothers, too. They might not be physical, but their attitudes about black, about women and black women in general is very negative. I've even had instructors who do classes to address domestic violence say stuff, well, you know how women are, brothers. You know, you just got to learn how not to put your hands on. That's a really bad kind of example to give when you are bringing that kind of attitude even to the group.
Okay, so Sam and Oliver, I want to ask a question that is about the systems being discounted in the system. It's about the value in controlling women. It's about, you know, responsibility. It's about trauma, meaning trauma, something that has been done to you, and how all of that fits in holding abusers accountable. So,
okay, could you break that down a little bit, because
sure,
there's a lot
sure.
in that question.
So I'm going to try to frame this question, because when I hear you talk about trauma, and, you know, trauma of racism, trauma of, you know, the impact of childhood issues and things like that, and displaced anger and, you know, regarding abusers.
Mm-hmm.
So I entered this work through the white feminist movement that really places a lot of responsibility and accountability on abusers, that battering is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when we're talking about the impact of trauma, misplaced anger or displaced anger, you know, feeling or being discounted by systems, looking at the current things that, you know, black men are going through in terms of feeling hunted by law enforcement. How do you factor in accountability for abusers for their violence against women? Where do you draw the line?
Oh, I don't think that there's a. Okay, I'm going to frame it to you. When I work with men who batter, African American men who batter, one of the things that I, and when I talked to black psychologists back in the day, what they said is that the behaviors that you see black men do are a response to the context that they find themselves in. Then what they say is that you can see, as a matter of fact, there have been people who've written books about that that say you can expect that behavior to be a result of what it is that they've been exposed to. But what I would say to them, too, is, and what they would almost say, it's a normal consequence of what they were exposed to. And I'd say, no, it's not a normal consequence. It's a maladaptive response. So it's not healthy. And if you look at the way that they're responding to it, it's a maladaptive response because it destroys family and community. So there's no justification for it. That doesn't mean that you don't attend to it. The problem that I've had with the feminist analysis associated with it is the fact that they don't take the other things into consideration and figure out how to treat it. You know, I think there are conversations that you have to have with men that deal with their reality, you know, but confront it. You don't accept everything. You acknowledge and confront. But if those issues don't make their way into the discussion associated, how can you confront them about issues that they need to work through if you don't include their voice in terms of dealing with it? So it's not justifying it or allowing it. It's recognizing it and confronting it and then helping them to problem solve the way that they look at situations and the way that they respond to it. So the problem with looking at literature that has been focused on African-American men and what they've been exposed to, and even what's been interesting, we've been working with churches to try to respond to domestic violence. And invariably, every time we had that conversation with ministers, what they want to talk about is the violence that happens in community, the murders that happen in community, the violence that black men experience. And I said, you know, those are real issues that need to be dealt with. Let's respond to them, but not at the consequence of ignoring what happens to black women. So let's come up with a way to respond to it that addresses both sets of issues.
But what typically happens is to shrink the issues in terms of African-American men to focus primarily on the issues that shrink the issues that happen to African-American women in order to focus on the issues that happen with African-American men. Both things require our attention if we're going to have a healthy community.
Okay, so I don't know if others experience it, but Oliver, your voice is just a tad bit muffled. And and also, too, I want you to hold that thought because that was a very important point. But we have to take a break for just a moment, and then we're going to come back and finish our conversation.
On behalf of Tony Porter, Bishop Freeze, and a call to men, all the men here want to say thank you. We want to recognize and thank you for the hard work and efforts to address and challenge the rights of women of color in the movement today. We just want to let y'all know we ain't got nothing but love for you. Nothing but love.
So we're back and want to continue with our conversation for tonight with Dr. Oliver Williams and Sam Simmons, both in Minnesota. And
Minnesota.
Yay, that's right. Yay from Minnesota. Minnesota's represent tonight because Miss Alice, you're in Minnesota too, so we just know that Minnesota is representing tonight. And we're talking about black men and the use of violence against women. So, Oliver, I want to ask you to repeat that last piece that you talked about. You were closing and talking about ministers want to address community violence, and you redirect that to say not to about not addressing violence against women as well at their expense. Can you reiterate that, please?
Yeah. Can you hear me a little bit better now?
Sure, much better. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that what happens is that when we have discussions about violence that happen in the African-American community, oftentimes when I'll go and have conversations with groups of men here or, you know, other places around the United States, people will want to focus on the violence that exists between African-American men or on African-American men. And I think, you know, I'm a black man. I have a son that I want to be well, and I want my son to be well. I want communities to be well. But I don't think it's the only thing that we can focus on, because what happens is that oftentimes when you have discussions about violence against women, it shrinks. People want to focus. It's like either or. And primarily they want to focus on the violence that happens with men and among men rather than focusing on violence that happens against women. And what I tell them is that both issues are important. Don't let one thing shrink to focus on the other thing only. And both issues have to be addressed. You know, you have mothers that organize against what happens to their sons. The sons have been killed and harmed, and they should do that. And community members should do that. But there's grandfathers and and fathers and mothers that all suffer because their daughters have been harmed or killed. So you don't have to choose. You have to do both. And so when you were asking the question, it seemed as though we had to make a choice or that we were deflating the importance of addressing African-American women, when I don't think that that's the way it has to be. I think that what we have to do is to deal with both sets of issues.
I'm going to interrupt us for a moment because I believe we got some callers on the line. So will the first caller please just chime in there with your question? And you might want to just introduce yourself by just saying where you're calling from. Well, it sounds like we're having a little bit of technical problems with getting the callers.
So this is Sam.
Calvin from Orlando. Hello.
Oh, hi. Welcome to the show. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, can you hear me? This is Calvin from Orlando.
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Okay. I kind of want to go in a little bit different direction based on some of the advice that I heard while I was on hold. And I am in an interracial relationship. My wife of the last 9 years is African-American and Puerto Rican. So if you know anything about Puerto Rican and African-American women, kind of they can be loud, very animated, very passionate when they speak. I've never was raised in a violent home. There was no violence in the home that I was growing up in. And it's funny that one of the people on the show earlier said that, and I shouldn't use the word funny, but it's interesting that they said, the generation where crack was in the inner city. She's from Detroit. So you put Detroit with that type of an environment and the fact that she had a substance abuse problem at one time in her life, it brings a whole new dynamic into the relationship that I never dealt with before. And it's gotten progressively worse. She has a daughter from a previous relationship who I've pretty much been the only male figure in the life for the past 8 years. And long story short, this has been getting worse, progressively worse, and I didn't know how to handle it. So we'd been watching TV together one night. Her daughter's grades had increasingly been getting worse. A lot of talk back to me. I've never tried to, you know, punish her or ground her or anything like that. And I snapped one night, and I just gave her a good, quick smack right across the fucking face. And I said, bitch, this is how we're going to run things now. Not only did her daughter's grades get better at school, but she was good for about 4 or 5 months. And I've noticed that giving her a quick, swift smack every about 4 or 5 months really keeps her in line, and the relationship has gotten better. Now, I don't do that to my girlfriend, but my wife, definitely. So I wonder if maybe there's a part of this that you guys are wrong. Maybe you do need to give these hoes a quick smack every once in a while.
Wow, man. Let me react to you a little bit. First of all, I'm from Detroit. Secondly, my wife is Puerto Rican. I understand what it's like to grow up in tough environments, but I've never hit my son. Never. Now, I got spanked when I was growing up, but back in those days, one of the issues was that parents didn't have a range of other opportunities. But the other thing, too, is if the only tool that you have is a hammer, then everything looks like a nail. You know, you use that hammer to be able to smash down on people. I don't think it's the right thing to do. I think that you have to learn other ways to be able to parent, but other things that you have to do is learn how to set limits with your child. It doesn't mean that you don't discipline them and set limits with them. But when I've interviewed men who batter about their interactions with their children, one of the things that they say that the primary thing that they need to do is to teach their children how to listen to what they have to say and to use violence as a way to do it without understanding other choices and other behaviors. You know, I went on a fundamentalist radio station and to talk about domestic violence, and they wanted me to address the issue of interacting with kids. And they were promoting the idea of, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child. Now, my response was this. You know, when the metaphor really deals with a person with a rod guiding the sheep, not beating it to death. So, you know, I hear what you're saying in terms of what you think, you know, is going to make it work. But one reality is the fact that's why people use violence, because they think it's a quick way to be able to respond to issues and get control of it. And what you've got to do is you've got to figure out another way to be able to deal with it. That's not the way that that may be something that you notice, but the one thing is she responding to you because she respects you, or is she responding to you out of fear? And there are other ways to be able to deal with it, and I think that you've got to learn how to be able to set limits to confront the child if the child is behaving in some ways that's inappropriate. But you're going to have to take a look at yourself associated with that. And also the terminology that you're using. For me, I won't use that terminology to describe, you know, young women, I would never use that to describe my wife. And that does harm to a person's psyche. And it does, harm to their emotions, too. So those are things that I think are important things to be able to look at. And that wouldn't be something that I would do.
Thank you, caller. And I believe we have another caller on the line. Okay. Sam, I'm going to go back to you and ask you this question. Why do you do what you do? Why do you do the work that you do around black men and their abusive behavior and around their trauma?
Is he on mute?
That last caller was oppressive, sexist, and everything that we appall in terms of male behavior, as far as I'm concerned. But now I'll go to the other question. Is I do this work because I was raised in a domestically violent home. I was raised in a domestically violent community. The thing is I myself have gotten caught up into that kind of behavior and realized that I needed to do something about my stuff. And one of the things that helped me a great deal is also to take a look at what my abuse as a child, not in all levels in terms of dealing with my trauma, the generational trauma, because this, in my family, this is all generational. That's why I do the work, and then I have a daughter. My only child is a daughter, and one of the things that I realize, especially I find very clear lately, is that as a community, sometimes we forget about our daughters at the cost of trying to save our sons, which becomes very dangerous for our young women, and become very dangerous for our community. And before I end, I want to address this whole thing about accountability. One of the approaches that we talk, when we talk about accountability, we talk about compassion accountability. Because the issue comes down to, we can have compassion for our brothers and the experience that they experience of violence, but compassion without no accountability, it don't bring nothing but chaos in families and in the community. So what does that mean? That means that I find that there's, you hold folks accountable, but you also take the compassion to explain why I have to hold you accountable, help them understand why the behavior that they're doing is inappropriate, and help them understand in the long run that learning how to address their frustrations about even racism and oppression is will improve their experience in their relationships, in the community, and make them better parents.
So when you talk about, Sam, when you talk about compassion, accountability, where does that fall in line with the previous caller? I mean, his language in terms of the way he referred to his partner and his wife and his girlfriend.
Right.
And the use of violence to keep her in line,
right.
You know, as a remedy or whatever. How does the compassion accountability factor into that kind of situation?
Well, first of all, the accountability has to come automatically. The next thing in terms of the compassion is getting this person to, if they want to or not, to understand why, how many levels of abuse and different type of abuse he made within that whole statement and the way he's dealing with his relationship. And the other piece is the patriarchy and the oppression just in the statement that he started with in terms of how he identified the woman, his wife or girlfriend that he's with. He started out putting all of it in terms of a racial and context. So that's probably why I only deal with American men.
Okay.
You go, Miss Allen. Yes,
my turn.
Yes, please.
You know, I found out why Sam is doing this work, but Alva, why are you doing this work?
Strong, Allie. There's a lot of reasons. I'll tell you some things. Among them is the fact that I asked my sisters about their experiences. And I have had four sisters. Two of them have passed away, or three of them have passed away. And so I have five sisters, three of them passed away. And three of my five sisters were all victims of abuse. And I had conversations with my mother. Way back when I was a child welfare worker, you know, when I was in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s. And, you know, she, in her first marriage, she was a victim of abuse. And then as Sam talked about, you know, he had to sort of go through his, you know, thing as a man. I had to sort of understand things and learn how to grow up and learn how to deal with my views of women. And so sometimes the way that I thought about things felt like they were in conflict with who I was, you know, back when I was in undergraduate school. So I had to, you know, sort of understand some of that. And then when I went to graduate school, one of the first studies that they did on domestic violence was at Western Michigan University. A guy named John Flynn did a study of a battered women's shelter. And as a consequence, I got a chance to sort of go there, but I also in undergraduate school saw friends of mine that dealt with the issue of domestic violence. And back in those days, there really wasn't much about working with men who battered. You know, they went to counseling sessions, you know, that treated as though it was interactional rather than it being an issue that a man had to take responsibility for in terms of trying to end his, you know, violent and abusive behavior. And nobody knew about it, you know, let me rephrase that. Nobody responded to it in a way that was appropriate, and even realized psychologists had to be trained on this issue, and family therapists and joint family therapy people had to be trained on how to view the issue of domestic violence. And then after the Better Women's Movement sort of made a move to try to deal with it and educate people about what the experiences were, it was like the Columbus effect. You know, professionals started to learn that they needed to respond to it in a meaningful way. And then they've become more aware of what the issues are associated with it. But, you know, that's the benefit of grassroots movements that work. And so I did it, you know, for listening to the voices of my sisters, recognizing that I needed to grow as a man. And the other thing that I did was I was a witness, you know, because I worked in battered women's shelters, I was a witness to what women experiences were. And then working with men who battered, you know, listening to what men, you know, would tell you about it. So that, and so it's important to be able to change it. And as a child welfare worker, how I got involved was there was a guy named Lou Oakham that worked at the Domestic Violence Project. It's called Safe House now in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And he came over and did a presentation on the co-occurrence of domestic violence and child abuse and neglect. And, you know, we didn't know much about that. So what we noticed was the fact, I noticed that I had a case like that where a woman had five children. The youngest was an infant that was the product of a relationship she had with an abusive man. The other four were from other relationships. She left the infant child with him and took off. And she took off because she wanted to be safe from his brutalizing her. And so when I started to recognize that, my cousin was on the Battered Woman Shelter Board, and I started volunteering at the shelter and at the Batterers Intervention Program.
Okay. So well, thank you for sharing that. With our last bit of time left, I want to ask a really important question, too. And, Sam, I want to start with you, and that question is, what should the interventions look like? And is it possible for some men to change?
There's a book called I'm going to go do this, Sam, and then I'll be quiet. There's a book called Unclenching Our Fist by Sarah.
What's that name of it? Say it again.
Unclenching Our Fist.
Unclenching Our Fist, okay.
Uh-huh. And it's by Sarah Elinoff Acker. That's A-C-K-E-R. And what she does is she ends up, and this was something that she did a few years ago, where she interviewed a number of men who had changed and ended up tracking their stories. I'm in the process of trying to do something like that through a fatherhood program and through a Batterers Intervention Program where they can identify people that they say have changed, and then we'll interview them in their post, present, or past female partner and talk about the stages of change. But this Unclenching Our Fists is an example of stories of people who have changed. There's also a video that Futures Without Violence did called Something My Father Would Do. And it's a video where they have told different stories, but one of them was of a man who had been abusive, and they interviewed him and his sons and the wife about his change. And he talked about why he changed. And Emerge has a video for years, you know, it's an old video, but it interviewed men who had been abusive but had changed.
Mm-hmm.
And IDVAC has got a couple things, too, where we've interviewed men who were children who were exposed to abuse, but also we've interviewed men who've changed.
Okay.
And had them tell their stories. And there's some really interesting things. So to answer the question, yes, men can change.
Okay.
Not all
men. Sam, can you add a little bit of that to the last 5 minutes we have as we're closing?
And Sam, tell a little bit about the Be More Project.
You there? Are you on mute? Are you talking on mute?
Men can change. So I agree with that. Again, our approach has been late over the last several years has been really getting men to get honest about their trauma and how they brought that trauma forward and their attitudes about women and how that even inflames it even more in terms of their treatment of women. You know, one of the sayings we have, especially with our black men, is they love their mama, but they didn't like the woman in her. And part of that has to do with their attitudes towards women in their lives come down to some issues that they might have with their moms in terms of conversations. And we found that those conversations and getting them to understand some of that allows them to let go, really open up enough to be able to hear what we're saying. Because sometimes the trauma affects what they hear, what they say, and then we throw the oppression that they're under. And so we like to move all of that stuff out the way so that what we're talking about absorbs in a shorter period of time so we have better outcomes. With the men and really affect their lives in terms of being nonviolent to their families, the women in their lives, and really taking full responsibility for other aspects of their life, really giving the responsibility of their life back to them. Because a lot of them feel like they don't have any responsibility for their lives, feel very hopeless because a lot of folks, different folks, have guided their lives since they've been growing up. And that's the slight difference I see, one of the slight differences I see in terms of dealing with primarily the African-American community. In terms of the BEMA project, that's a project we're dealing with where we're engaging both older men and young men around the issues of healthy relationships. What we had found when we would do focus groups around healthy relationships, we would ask the group, what is a healthy relationship, and they would give all the right answers. And then when we would say, when the last time you've seen a healthy relationship, the room would go quiet.
So, Sam, I hate to interrupt you, but we've got to go. And that's the point that we really, really need to make sure that people understand is that folks have not seen healthy relationships, and there's a consequence to all of us for that, and especially at the expense of black women. This has been a really great show. It's been a really great show, and we're so glad to have had both of you, Dr. Williams and Sam Simmons, on our show tonight. But we've run out of time. We are getting ready to shut it down in just about 10 seconds. So we don't even have time to say goodnight.
Good night. Love you both.
Thanks for doing this for us. Have a lovely evening. Good night.
Well, that's it for today's show. You've been listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, right here every week at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. Visit us on the web at idvac.org to find out more information about our guests and presenters and to download podcasts of previous shows of IDVAC Blog Talk Radio. Until next week, be safe.